Check. Check 1, 2, 3.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. Here we are in Florida, all across the country and all around the world. Welcome, no matter where you are on this beautiful planet of ours. Welcome to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. And let me give you fair warning right now. I want you, all of you, turn off C-SPAN. You've got to listen to this show. I will keep you apprised of what happened, and I'm gonna give you the full story of what happened on C-SPAN today. Okay, I'm gonna sum it up for you. Going to do that in just a minute. What do we got planned today? Well, Bruce from Talking Radio is going to be with us in the second hour, pretty much at the top of the hour. Let us know what's going on in the world of talk radio. And let me tell you, it ain't good for liberal. It ain't good at all. No. And here's a phone number. I want you to write this down. I want you to write this phone number down. Put your pen in your hand and write down 202-224-4721. 202-224-4721. That's Senator Inhofe's number from Oklahoma. Call that crazy bastard and tell him what you think about him trying to keep the Al Gore big deal from taking place on the Capitol lawn about the global warming and all. Here's a guy that's a complete moron, and I think we should just flood his office with calls. I understand he's been getting a few, and they need yours in as well. So call him. That's Inhofe's number. Tell him you object to him saying Al Gore doesn't know what he's talking about, global warming, that he's in the minority, and keep your hands off of what Al Gore's trying to do, and just shut your damn oaky mouth, you fool. That's the best message, you shut your oaky mouth, you fool. Nothing wrong with being an oaky. There's a lot of great oakies. Will Rogers was one, I think. worst thing is to be a stupid Okie. Stupid anything, I guess. I know you've all been watching possibly the GSA hearings yesterday. We'll talk a little bit about that today. I know you're watching the hearings about Gonzo. Let's just call them the Gonzo hearings. And Mr. Kyle Sampson is testifying today. He's been at it most of the morning, about 10 o'clock I think it started. I listened to quite a little bit of it. But let me sum it all up for you. Let me sum it all up. Here's what you need to know. Here's what Mr. Kyle Sampson has said today, and here is all he's going to say. This is my fault. It's nobody else's fault. Yes, there were some mistakes made, but it's my fault. That's why I resigned. This was just all normal fare for Washington, D.C. to hire and fire these people in the manner in which they were. Doesn't really mean anything other than that, and it is me, Kyle Sampson, who's at fault, and so do not blame anybody on up the chain of command. I'm not ratting on them like a lot of you thought I was going to in my testimony today. All I'm telling you is I don't know anything. I don't have any records. Yes, we had these personnel changes and months of thinking about it and all. I don't have any notes on it. I didn't keep any notes on it. Folks, I want to tell you something. If you go to Washington, D.C., don't drink the water. There's something in the water that makes you lose your memory. And if you don't believe me, listen to this from that Doan woman at the GSA hearings from last night.
Did anybody at any point say these were inappropriate subjects? Or somebody said
it's in the water, I tell you.
Do you remember any of that?
I really do not remember anything about this meeting. Honestly, I have told you I do not have any recollection of saying that. I have no recollection of saying that. I honestly have no recollection of making that statement. Sir, I do not know what happened to him. I don't know what Mike Butterfield said. I don't really know what Jim Williams says. I want to try to do a direct quote because I don't remember denying what they're saying. I'm simply saying there were cookies on the table. I remember coming in late. I remember I honestly don't even remember that.
I understand.
I know you're talking.
I think
I don't know how many times I've said this, fourth or fifth time, but I will repeat again that I do not recollect this. I honestly and absolutely have no recollection.
So the moral of that story is, if you go to Washington, do not drink the water, because you'll come back an utter fool. You'll forget everything. Yeah, you'll forget to bring your clothes home. You'll leave your suitcases in the hotel. You just forget everything all of a sudden. That seems to be what happens to the folks there. That was from the GSA hearings that took place last night, and or yesterday, and I watched them last night. Oh, man, these Republicans right now, they're just... Those hearings, the GSA hearings, the one today is rather boring, I thought. But the GSA hearings are just unbelievable. The Republicans kept telling how they used to run things. And every one of them sat there pumping up Ms. Doan and just totally ignoring what she's accused of doing. Trying to make it all right. And it was another one of those everybody does it defenses. And then Dan Burton, that SOB, Dan Burton, was particularly offensive along with Congressman Chris Shea and a few others. I don't know how Waxman puts up with them, frankly. I really don't. On one or two occasions while I watched that last night, I was thinking that he should have called the sergeant of arms or security and had one or two of them thrown out of there. And Doan's was using the old Hogan's Hero Sergeant Schultz defense. I know nothing. And you just heard her say it, I don't know how many times. It's just some sort of a disease the Bush administration has right now. I don't know. I don't forget. I don't have any notes. Can you imagine you're going to fire a certain number of U.S. attorneys and you don't keep any notes on it? Months in deciding which ones you're going to get rid of, they said, and you know, all the considerations, the facts and considerations of the matter, and you don't have any notes on it. Are we really to believe that? I don't think so. And if you think these folks aren't playing hardball, listen to this. This is an ad by the called New Mexicans for Honest Courts. If you think they don't, if you're one of their team and you quit playing ball with them like David Iglesias has, this is what they do to you. This is an ad running on New Mexico radio and TV.
Paid for by New Mexicans for Honest Courts.
Former U.S. Attorney David Iglesias wonders why he was fired. Says it was politics. Well, let's look at the facts. Iglesias brags he won a huge corruption case, but he cut sweetheart plea deals with most involved, and then lost 23 of 24 counts at trial.
Not guilty.
In 2004, 3,000 suspect voter registration forms turned up. But Iglesias did nothing, even when a crack dealer was busted with him, and even when political operatives took the fifth and refused to testify about their fraud. David Iglesias just looked the other way. No wonder a criminal defense lawyer just praised him. He let her client walk. While he looked the other way on fraud, Iglesias did prosecute a girl for putting bubblegum on a speeding ticket. And he did find time to take dozens of taxpayer-funded junkets around the world. Meanwhile, his own prosecutors criticized him, and a former state Supreme Court justice publicly called him an ingrate. Now Iglesias is even trying to play the race card. David Iglesias, he still can't figure out why he was fired.
So there you have it. If you don't play ball with these boys, if you step out of line, if they want to fire you and then you complain about it afterwards, they run ads against you in your home state. Nice group we're talking about here, right? Very, very nice group of people. And I heard Sampson today say, this Kyle Sampson, I heard him say, I didn't discuss my testimony with anyone else, and I didn't keep any written records of how I chose the U.S. attorneys to be fired. He's just like a good Scooter Libby trooper. He's taking the fall. He'll end up with a great job some other day, just like Catherine Harris did after she played ball during the 2000 election. She ended up in Congress, got her ass thrown out now after the people got wise to her. But they'll reward you. The Bushies will take care of you as long as you play ball. Oh, they will. Make no mistake about that. And now I see we've got the National Review. Nearly fell over when I read this. The National Review is calling for Gonzo's resignation. They're calling this a partisan witch hunt, and the National Review is wanting his head. Oh, Bill, but Mr. Buckley, what would you think about that? When's the last time you agreed with anything in the National Review? Man, oh man, oh man. And before I go any further, I do want to let you know that Billy Shears over at unreportednews.net. You can find him on there. He's got his Thursday night special out, and you always want to read the comment and hear the music that Billy's got down on that. So that's over on unreportednews.net. Take a look down the left side, Billy Shears Thursday night special. You'll enjoy it. I know you will. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254. And speaking of phone calls, let's take one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut again.
Hi, Greg.
Sorry for being such a pest this week, but I found something really interesting here. I don't know if you followed what's happened in the last hour or so, but the Republicans shut down a whole Senate hearing when they were interviewing this guy, Sampson, Kyle Sampson. Just as Grassley was about to start questioning him, they applied this obscure rule that says that they can't have a session like that, a committee session, while Senate is in session. So the Republicans essentially shut down the meeting, which is pretty unprecedented, and I guess it's going to stay closed as long as Senate stays in session. So you know that they're crapping their pants about something for them to do something that radical, you know, when Sampson was testifying.
Well, I think they've I think they're so pissed off at being in the minority right now, they can't stand it. Even in those GSA hearings I was watching last evening, a couple of them just went ballistic. Well, yeah, we used to do this, and we used to do that, and you're being unfair. Oh, cry me some more tears. Like, I feel sorry for you, like anybody feels sorry for you. It's true, they didn't have very many investigative-type hearings. They swept everything under the rug. It was their people doing everything. Hell, they wouldn't have done anything about Duke Cunningham if they hadn't absolutely been forced to.
Well, but they did a lot of investigative hearings for Clinton. I mean, they had, you know, even that little Christmas card deal. They had hundreds of hours of testimony on that. You know, so it's, you know, they, that's BS when they say, you know, they haven't done a lot of investigations. They didn't do a lot of investigations for their own Republican president. But for Clinton, I mean, every 5 minutes they were having an investigation.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that means nothing.
Dan Burton went nuts about that on those hearings yesterday. But, well, the Clinton people, they didn't come and testify. They all left the country, and they came here and they lied. And, he was as obnoxious. I don't know how Waxman stands it. I don't.
Well, you know, and last week we had that whole incident with Inhofe trying to shout down Barbara Boxer, and she says, look, elections have consequences, you know, because these people, what they want is they want to shut down any public debate. They don't want the public to know about these things. They don't want any of this to come up. So, you know, they're going to scream and throw little fits and everything like that, you know. And, you know, everything that we heard about the last, previous to November, about how we used to have up and down votes and this and that and none of these parliamentary tricks, you know, that's all changed now. Now we can have all the parliamentary tricks we want, you know, because, you know, they're not in control anymore.
Burton looked at Henry Waxman last night and with all the vitriol he could muster and said, yeah, now that you're in the majority, he said, you're in the majority now. There was a time you were in a minority. And he said, there's nothing worse than nothing more pious than a reformed prostitute. And he looked right at Waxman. You know, if I was Waxman, I kind of got up and smacked him for that.
If anybody should be a reformed prostitute, it's the GOP.
Dan Burton, most especially.
These people are just vile. And, you know, I think I'm hoping that they're going to self-destruct the next couple of years because, you know, as it is Bush, you know, he's not going to let Gonzo go, you know. So what's going to happen is I think things are going to get worse and worse and worse, and it's going to just be more of a shadow on the GOP, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but, you know, I think it can't help them going into 2008.
I agree with you. I do. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye now. Let's go over to line two here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Mr. James. This is Kevin from Washington.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the issue of the enfranchisement of the District of Columbia area and what dirty, foul tricks they've done by saying, well, with the gun, you know, with the local gun control law, they just kind of casually slipped that in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing, you know, what they will do. You know, it's like, God forbid, one of the most politically active and, I would say, financially well-off black enclaves in this country becomes enfranchised. And it's clearly racist, but on the bigger note, the Democrats need to start, like, calling these people's bluff in the poker game of politics. You know what? I would have said, okay, let the gun laws go through. And you know what? When they start doing drive-bys around the Capitol, that's when they'll feel it. I was a Democrat, I would say, okay, fine. You want the gun laws to be repealed in D.C.? Okay, fine. Because let me tell you something. Drug money outspends taxpayer dollars any day.
Well, and they're, you know, screaming bloody murder. What they're hiding for behind that, that one is... lost my train of thought. Oh, the Constitution. They're saying, well, you know, it's not constitutional to let Washington, D.C. in and have representation. It's fine if Cheney and Bush and a number of others in that administration have a shredder and shred the Constitution. That's okay. But when it behooves them to hide behind it, why, it's, you know, all sorts of, they just...
But they will find any nook. And you're like today, you know, how cowardly can you be? Testify.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. You know, it's like they'll find any nook or cranny to hold on to.
Yeah, they sure do. And they're going to be really shrill from here on out. We better get ready for that. Thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
It's a subject we haven't discussed here in the program. We'll get to it some of these days. Representation from Washington, D.C. It's something that to a lot of people in this country isn't important, but he brought up a great point about a number of people being disenfranchised, and that's the way they like it. So it's the way the Republicans like it anyway. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Saddam's Iraq, he trained him to attack. Daddy Bush had a plan to have Iraq destroy Iran. Then Saddam took Kuwaiti soil, and Daddy Bush lost all of his oil. Daddy Bush attacked Saddam. He tried to take him out with a bomb. Saddam tried to have Daddy slain. Now little George's got him on the brain. Little George's gonna get Iraqi ass and steal all his oil and gas. Tell me please, what are we fighting for? Inspectors ain't found nothing yet. Osama vanished underground, and Bush just needs a sheik to pound. Saddam will be overthrown. Georgie has to do it all alone. The power's going to his head. He told the UN to go drop dead. He engineered a White House coup. Gonna give Iraq one tell. Tell me, please, what are we fighting for? Must top his pop. The president must have a score to win in 2004. Who will Georgie Bush whack next? The Ruskies, the French, the crowds of Czechs. Syria, Libya, Korea, Iran, Arabia, India, or Pakistan. Americans can only pray.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Welcome back, everybody. A couple of you have asked about got several emails and a couple of responses on the Head On Radio Network chat room about where that ad come from. It's being played in Mexico and in New Mexico and financed by a group called, and I'm pretty sure I've got this right, I deleted it already, New Mexicans for Fair Courts. And it's naturally funded by a right-wing organization. Don't dare mess with Bush. You get them pissed at you after, you know, if you open your mouth, they'll get you. They get you every time. Look what they did to Richard Clark, one of the most trusted men in government, nonpartisan. And when he came out and disagreed with him about some things on 9/11 and all, and mentioned the fact that the Bushies have been talking about attacking Iraq long before 9/11, oh, and all of a sudden, Mr. Clark, he was just a no good SOB, right? Don't mess with him. But we're going to keep messing with him. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Just mention it quickly. What do you think about this situation with the British and the Iranians right now? Do you think that'll trigger the war? Do you think that's what the Bushies been waiting for all along? I kind of do. And it's such a screwed up mess. And if anybody would just take the time to research the thing. We have Blair and Bush. And I want you to think about what I want to say here. Think about it for a moment. If this had happened 5 years ago. 5 years ago, before the Bush-Iraq war, and the Iranians had captured some Brits and said they were in Iranian waters, everybody would have believed them. Would have believed the Brits and the United States backing them up, Bush and Blair. We'd say, hey, those doggone Iranians, they took those British guys right off the ships in Iraqi waters. They had no right to do that. So everybody would have... Everybody would have believed them. Now, nobody believes them. Well, nobody except that 30% that live in this country, but there is not that solid core of 30% anyplace else in the world. Nobody believes them. Nobody believes Bush and Blair on this. Nobody believes that they know for a fact that those British boats were in Iraqi waters. And had the press studied this Shatt al-Arab waterway anyway, they would have known that it's a very busy, and a tricky waterway, to say the least. A lot of people think this was something isolated. It took place out there. There were Iraqi fishing boats out there in the water with the Iranian patrol boats. And you can see one shore from another. From the Iraqi shore, you can see the Iranian shore and their flags flying. And these are extremely disputed waters, which is what got my guard up right away. In 1975, there was a treaty signed in Algiers between the Shah of Iran and Saddam Hussein. And the center of this river was supposed to be the border. Well, then Saddam invaded Iran in 1980. And after the Iran-Iraq war that this sparked ended in 1988, and even after both Gulf Wars, things remained very inconclusive where that river's concerned, and a new treaty has never been signed. So there is no clarification on where one's waters begins and the other one ends. And the British right now are adamant that the sailors were in Iraqi waters checking for cars, not weapons being smuggled. That's right, cars. And it's almost laughable that the Royal Navy should be reduced to finding dangerous Toyotas in the Persian Gulf. But some reports from Tehran claim the British were actually checking Iranian military preparations ahead of a possible confrontation with the U.S. And, of course, the Western corporate media still overwhelmingly take for granted that the British were in Iraqi or international waters. And Tehran has accused the British of, quote, blatant aggression, and reminded the world public opinion this is not the first time that Britain commits such illegal acts. And Tehran diplomats later suggested that the British might be charged with espionage, the ones they have in captivity. And not surprisingly, Iraq Foreign Minister Zabari had to take the side of the occupiers who installed him in his post. He said the British were in Iraq and invited by the Iraqi government and were operating in Iraqi waters. But that doesn't stop people, especially in the Islamic world, questioning what business the British as an occupation force had in the Shatt al-Arab waterway to start with. And from the depths of their abysmal recent historical experience, even in the Arab world, which is not so fond of Persians, see the U.S. orchestrated U.S. sanctions on Iran for what they are. The West, once again, trying to smash an independent nation, daring to have its shot at more influence in the Middle East. So, we shall see who wins this mess. Tactically, you might look at it as maybe a backgammon, or better yet, a chess move in which Iranians excel. The Shatt al-Arab incident may be much more clever than it appears. We will see what happens in the next few days. I don't think this is going to take long to play out. And we have this story. Where did I put it? One wonders how true it is. This story... what did I do with it here? I had some notes on this about this supposed plan to invade Iran on, what was it, the 6th or the 10th, something like that, of April. We shall see. Don't know what's going to happen along those lines, dude. It may be true, it may not. But I think we can all see there's some sort of a confrontation coming with the Iranians, and it appears to me that the Iranians are just not gonna back down from it. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. Yesterday, Bush quoted, and I'm sure a lot of you that had the stomach for it. Bush quoted two bloggers when he was trying to tell how good things are in Iraq now. He quoted a couple of bloggers who are actually pretty much a couple of tools from the enabling Iraq the Model. Two dentists are these bloggers. And so you know, you all saw him quote these two bloggers that are telling it how things are, how good it is there. Now, two dentists who have been servicing for the Bush administration for several years. That's right, two dentists. They've been huffing the gas and shooting the cane ever since they first came online. This is how far he and his argument for continuing the slaughter in Iraq have fallen. Bush said yesterday, and started quoting these two anonymous bloggers for Baghdad, and he cited them as evidence that his surge is working. Just one problem. The posts that he was quoting were written weeks and weeks ago and then republished in the Wall Street Journal on March the 7th. So this is very, very stale information. And then he quoted two of them and made a big deal of doing it as well. Remember this? Let me quote him. He said, "Displaced families are returning home." He's quoting these blogs. "Displaced families are returning home. Marketplaces are seeing more activity. Stores that were long shuttered are now reopening. We feel safer about moving in the city now. Our people want to see this effort succeed." Now, it was a few hours later, but finally the White House did reveal that the bloggers were brothers, Mohammed and Omar Fadil, and these supposedly little-known average Joes. And you all heard the story that he was trying to put forth. "Oh, I happened to read a couple of bloggers in Baghdad is saying how nice everything's are. Gee, I found these, and somebody in our administration found these bloggers, and this is so indicative of how things actually are. We just like looked at all these, just picked these two. And the fact that these two are there is evidence enough that things are going swimmingly in Iraq." And so he picks these two out and didn't let us all know their little secret, that these two average Joes, these bloggers, Mohammed and Omar, had met Bush in the Oval Office in 2004. They're dentists, and they write an English-language blog from Baghdad called IraqTheModel.com, also available via Pajamas Media. The White House later admitted that Bush had plundered the lines from an op-ed that the brothers wrote for the Wall Street Journal way back on March the 5th. The White House couldn't even get the date right. It turns out it actually happened on March the 7th. And Howie Kurtz interviewed the brothers more than 2 years ago during their visit to the U.S. and quoted Mohammed Fadil in a December 2004 column where this Mohammed said, "Now we want to say in a loud and clear voice that we welcome American troops and consider this a liberation, not an occupation." Fadil said, "People outside Iraq are more worried than the Iraqis themselves." And so Greg Sargent goes on to point out, more recent posts from these guys shows the importance of flossing and rinsing. On March 18th, said, "Every time I tell myself that my next blog will be a pleasant story of days of old," that's a different blogger, "I'm confronted with a different story that needs to be told. A friend of mine called me to tell me the bad news. Her brother had been kidnapped, and the ransom set at $100,000 for any Iraqi. Such an amount spells disaster. They sold everything they could. The whole extended family pitched in to save the poor man. They told the abductors that they couldn't manage more than $20,000. Surprisingly, the criminal said, 'Okay, have the woman bring the money to blah, 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 blah.' And then leading her on a merry dance, a boy of 16 or 17 approached her, took the money, and said, 'We'll contact you.' And that was the last they saw them. We found his picture. We have his number. His face was all bruised, and there was a hole drilled in his forehead. He died in pain. His hands were tied above his head." Seems to me the Bush people are very selective in which blogs they read, aren't they? Very selective. And then we find it happens to be, just happens to be, a couple of unknown bloggers that happen to meet Bushy Boy in the White House. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, hello, Guy. It's Teresa calling.
Hi.
How are you? I was calling about the Iranian so-called, or the British so-called hostages. To me, the whole story seems to not make sense. Like, I would have thought the Bush administration would have been blaring a lot louder about it than they have been. And where's the boarding party that would have been there with this group of sailors? Like, how did they manage to get these sailors without... You know, if there was, if these British sailors were supposedly just happened on by and thought they'd do some law enforcement, maybe these guys are stealing cars. Like, wouldn't have they? They would have had a larger ship. That
sure, they would have had. They would have had a.
They would have seen it.
They would have had a whole contingent there with them. They would have had air support. They would have had it all.
Yeah.
The whole story smells.
And also the fact that I just would have thought that the Bush administration would have been like right on it if this was their planned Gulf of Tonkin thing.
Well, they'll give them a chance.
I kind of think that maybe they were in there spying, or who knows?
But, yeah.
The official story just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't, and I don't know how one side or the other can swear that they were in. You know, the fact is,
they
know this is disputed water. They know that this border, the treaty, hasn't been signed. They know it's all highly questionable. Why stick your nose in there in the first place?
Yeah, why would they go mucking about there looking for cars dealers, or, you know?
No, it was obvious to me that it was a provocation, trying to provoke something, trying to provoke maybe some shots being fired and give them the excuse they need.
Or maybe it was they were trying to smuggle in, the British, smuggle in Iranian arms so that they can say, "Oh, look what we found."
Yeah.
And they got caught.
You know, it's a sad fact. It's a sad story when you don't believe your own country anymore and you don't believe your country's favorite ally, the British. I don't believe either one of them on this story.
I know. Tony Blair has been a huge disappointment to me for a long time. But, like, when he first came into power, I don't know, know, maybe it's just the accent or something.
It's a good thing you folks got rid of that monarchy back when you did.
Oh, yes.
And that British influence. You don't have to worry about them anymore.
Yep.
Hey, thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.
I remember when I was a little kid, you'd go up to Canada and there's all these plates with the, they make these beautiful china plates with the queen on, and you know, they sold them at Niagara Falls and they were, that was a big deal back then, but not anymore. Our neighbors to the north are a proud, free, democratic country. Not without their problems. They have problems as well, but, what is it? The longest unprotected border in the world between two countries. Us in Canada, great place, Canada. Been in every province in Canada, and I do love the place. Spectacular country, especially my favorite part of it's out west. You get out west into Saskatchewan and Alberta, and up through the Northwest Territory. Spectacular, absolutely spectacular. British Columbia is nothing to sneeze at either. We're going to pause for a quick break, and. We'll be back in just a moment or two. I think we're going to pause for a quick break. Not all that quick. We'll be back in just a moment.
Their trust in a creed. They had faith in the law and the worth of a deed. But above all the rest, it was truth that came first. In the sins of the cowboy, a lie was the worst. Now old Davy Crockett had a motto, it said, be sure you are right, and then go ahead. But a rich boy from Texas has forgotten his roots, and the pride of his homeland is dead. All had and no cattle, with no master plan, and the need to do battle to avenge your old man. Cisco and Pancho Roy would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Yes, we knew the Lone Ranger didn't need any fame. When they wanted to thank him, they just got his name. He needed no credit or praise for his time, but he'd do the right thing just the same. All had and no cattle with no master plan, and the need to do battle to avenge your old man. Wild Bill and Wyatt and Gene would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. If it's half gun we'll travel, that our nation believes. We need truth from a wise man who would not deceive. When Paladin reached for his Colt 45, he was certain the truth would survive. All had and no cattle with no master plan, and the need to do battle with your head in the sand. Hop along, Cassidy, sure would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Yes, all those old cowboys would surely be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, here on the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. Network loaded with great show hosts, Jeff Allen Wolf, John Fox, Dr. Bill, Bob Kincaid, Mark Levine. Most of the morning and long into the evening, you can get great programming here on the Head On Radio Network. Welcome to the show. You know, I was watching these hearings, and I've been paying attention to them as much as I can. And as you could probably tell as of late, I'm a little bit sick of the whole political mess on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I'm more upset with the Republicans than I am the Democrats. But I sat there and watched this hearing last night, the GSA hearings, and I promise, talk about them a little in a while. And then the hearings today. And you look at all the congressmen sitting there and the senators sitting there. And do you ever stop and check out the backgrounds of most of the politicians? If you take the time to do that, and I have on a great number of them, I think you'll find that most of them have made a career of being a politician. And I'm talking about pure professional politicians. That is their goal, to get elected and stay elected until they can retire. You would be surprised how many of these people were pages and then took political science in school and then got a job with as an intern, a job as an aide, and just worked their way up the ladder, have spent their entire working, if you want to call it that, lives as an elected official. And the thing is, that is their goal, to get elected and stay elected until they can retire. And most of them have spent all or nearly all of their adult lives in politics. And very few, a small percentage, have had decently long careers in the private sector. Some of them have been government prosecutors, usually at the state level, but I don't think that counts as a private sector job since it is very highly political. And it might be unreasonable to say so, but I can't help wondering whether the fact that so few politicians have significant experience on the private side, and even fewer have been major successes there, I can't help but wonder if that is part of the problem with today's politicians. Politicians who've had no private careers have nothing to fall back on if they lose office. The best they can usually hope for, perhaps the only thing they can hope for, is become a highly paid lobbyist, and a lot of them do that. For a federal politician, it means to become one of the K Street crowd. But politicians don't want to lose elections regardless of the possibility of becoming another of those parasites over in K Street or its state-level equivalents, and they do have them in the state level as well. Those who they just get paid, the politicians on the state level just get paid less from the lobbyists. that's the thing. But, you know, that's got to be one of the reasons they're so willing to lie and to cheat and to steal, so to speak, to remain in office. And that is, this must be one of the reasons they talk out of both sides or all four sides of their mouths, why they're dishonest, why they lust after the legalized bribes called campaign contributions, why they do the bidding of the wealthy while they're screwing over the common guy, why they're too cowardly to stand up to evil in a lot of cases, and we're seeing that today. When you have nothing to fall back on, your choices are more restricted than those of someone who can say, well, to hell with you. I'll go back to satisfying job-delivering babies, or I'll open my own investment bank, or as once was true of major figures in the executive, I'll go back to being a senior partner in a Wall Street or sometimes even a downtown Washington law firm. And there's another factor involved, too. People on the private side, and even more so among those who are major successes there, of necessity, have the character to get the job done. This is worlds apart from the political attitude, which is to talk, not to get the job done, to talk, rather than to accomplish great things, to try to offend nobody, or at least as few as possible, rather than take well-thought-out positions. Having the principles to get the job done seems to be sadly lacking amongst professional politicians who talk all day long. And they do it in a way that they hope will advance their wish that everybody will like them, or at least that nobody will dislike them. And I think if I'm right in thinking that people with long, significant careers in the private side, those who have been major successes there, unlike George Bush, who was a major failure there, I think those people would bring to politics some traits that are really needed, badly needed in Washington right now. I believe it is unrealistic to expect the professional politicians of our two current policies, parties, to encourage their own replacement by a different breed of cat, even if the new breed of cat might be in some respects a throwback to the successful private side types who were so prominent among the founding fathers. But the idea that more of our politicians, perhaps even most of them, should be persons with records of success on the private side does raise certain questions and does give rise to certain criticisms. To begin with, there's the question of whether successful people will leave their careers to run and hold office, and will do so despite the savage attacks from their opponents and the media nowadays. That's a big problem, keeping a lot of really good people out of politics. And there used to be a tradition of public service in this country that was, you can easily find, it was illustrated by major private side figures like Stimson and Acheson and Forrestal and Stevenson and Vance. And I suspect that a lot of successful private side people today, too, would be interested in service if we encouraged them to it and respected them for it. And nor would they have to go and do public service, without end. 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever would be sufficient from a standpoint of public interest if they don't fall into that old trap and get Potomac fever. And I think it's less likely that they would do so since they'd be people who have experienced gratification outside of the public sector, somebody that has a life other than being a politician. And these successful people from the private sector would be able to get things done in Washington. They're people who are used to giving orders and getting the job done rather than taking months to sit around and talk about it. They like to get things done efficiently, quickly, without all the BS that the House or the Senate likes to go through. That doesn't mean that they're not good at the art of compromise. Very often, private side business involves compromise, and men who are accomplished in private business are usually very good at compromise. And as much as I can't stand the guy, you read the book The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump, and I cannot stand the guy, but compromise hey, the art of the deal, compromise is involved in it, and that's what these politicians are not so very good at. So, you know, after all, what I'm discussing here is the need for people who've shown that they can be successful. Not private side hacks like George Bush or Rumsfeld or Cheney, who were nothing but professional politicians that were they're chosen to head private companies strictly because of their political connectedness, and who especially Cheney didn't do such a hot job on the private side. We all know that. Now, the word here is competence. We need competent people in the all-important Congress of the United States. Not to mention that competence comes from a host of walks of life, has no racial, no religious or gender limits, and will be shown by a lot of people who have worked themselves up from nothing. And plenty of people who are competent will be liberals, especially perhaps those who had to work themselves up from nothing. Competence, after all, is not the exclusive preserve of the conservatives, nor is incompetence all that the conservatives have to show either. The downside is the fact that proven competence on the private side will not necessarily translate into competence in political matters, not always. And a perfect example of that is Bill Frist. Very successful private sider coming over to the political side and being a total failure. I don't know all the answers. I pretend to know what will work to fix our broken government. However, I do know what isn't working. And in my opinion, never will. Never, ever will. We've got to find a way to get better people. People that are not interested in coming to Washington, D.C. and staying there forever and today. We're not getting the good people. I think that's it in a nutshell. I watch these professional politicians, and it's not to say there aren't some good ones, and it's not to say there aren't a handful that were private sector successes. There are those people there. Cole, for example, is one. that I have to sit here and try and think who is another. But there are successful people in Congress, but once they get there, they get that Potomac fever and they get lulled in with the group of the the professional politicians. And I don't know how that's going to end. I don't know what we can do to stop it. It's so pervasive in Washington. You can just feel it every place you go. We've talked about it on this show so many times about how that town is. It's a small town. It's actually a village. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's in on all the dirty little secrets. Everybody knows there's graft and corruption, and you pat my back, and I'll pat yours. Everybody knows it's how that town runs. And we're not getting the most for our money. We're not getting the most for our vote. It's we, the public, that are getting screwed by these people. And there are some people there who genuinely care about public service. This new Senator Klobuchar from, I probably said her name wrong, from Minnesota, had a chance to talk to her not long ago in Washington. Woman genuinely concerned about public service. And I hope she doesn't get Potomac fever. There are just so many of them get there, and after such a short time, they just become enamored with the whole social scene there, with the power trip that they're on, the way they're treated with adoration by so many people. It's ruined a lot of good people. Makes me wonder if what's his name from New York, the mayor of Bloomberg from New York, is going to run for the presidency on the independent ticket. Who knows? The guy's a great administrator. The guy's a very successful businessman. I'm not saying I'd vote for him, but I'd have to take a better look at him. But there's an example right there of a guy highly successful in the private sector that might take a shot at the presidency. We shall see. There's certainly nobody in the Republican side right now that's got any of them excited. We know that for a fact. Nobody at all. I still think the winner of the Republican nomination isn't in the race yet. Had somebody send me an email, said, oh, they hoped Newt Gingrich was it. Oh, man, if Newt Gingrich becomes the president of the United States here in Costa Rica, here I come. I wouldn't be able to, as much as I despise looking at George Bush's face, I despise Newt Gingrich twice as much. The most arrogant, pompous hypocrite that's ever lived on this planet. And how anybody in the Republican Party could even think of having Newt Gingrich as a president, knowing what that he is the ultimate hypocrite, the ultimate liar, the ultimate stick-your-family-values-up-you-know-where guy, while saying he's a, you know, good family values guy. I can't stomach him. Just can't stomach him at all. Well, we're coming up on news at the top of the hour in just a few seconds. And you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll be back right after the news, and we'll have our guest Bruce with it to let us know what's happening in the world of talk radio. So don't go away. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, Kyle Sampson, the former top aide to U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, told the Senate Judiciary Committee today his boss wasn't accurate when he said he wasn't involved in the dismissal of eight U.S. attorneys. Sampson said Gonzalez did attend a meeting that addressed the firings, but no attorney was released to influence a case. The U.S. Senate today has passed a $123 billion spending bill for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Included in the bill, a requirement for the White House to bring troops home in 4 months. President Bush says he will veto the bill. Britain has gone to the UN to make its case to get 15 British sailors and Marines captured by Iran released. The UK wants the Security Council to support a statement that would condemn Tehran's actions and demand their return. Iran, meanwhile, has suspended the release of the female sailor and wants Britain to admit the crew members crossed into Iranian waters. Sectarian violence continues in Baghdad as more than 100 people were killed in numerous attacks in mostly Shiite neighborhoods. 60 were killed when a suicide bomber hit a market in the Shab district, while three other suicide car bombs killed around 50 people in Khalis. Israel has rejected the Arab reintroduction of an initiative to exchange peace in the Middle East for land occupied by Israel following the 1967 war. Israel opposes a land deal as well as allowing Palestinians to return to their homes in what is now Israeli territory. Australia has agreed it will not shorten the prison sentence of convicted Guantanamo Bay detainee David Hicks if he's permitted to serve his time in an Australian prison. Hicks has already spent 5 years at Guantanamo. Sentencing for the Australian may come today or tomorrow. A tornado as wide as two football fields cut through a small Colorado town as an early spring storm stretching from South Dakota to Texas killed at least 4 people in 3 states. The National Weather Service says 65 tornadoes were reported across the Great Plains, and warnings for severe weather are still up for parts of Wyoming. In Washington, the legendary Tuskegee Airmen will receive the Congressional Gold Medal in a ceremony today in the Capitol Rotunda. The Black Fire pilots distinguished themselves in World War II as to have never lost a bomber during an escort mission. The U.S. Marines will be instituting a ban on large tattoos below the elbow or knee. Marines already with the banned tattoos are exempt, but will not be allowed to add more ink. The Marine Corps says the large body art doesn't comply with traditional values. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
The UN's health organizations are recommending that heterosexual men become circumcised based on evidence that doing so reduces the risks of HIV by as much as 60%. The agencies estimate in Africa alone, 3 million deaths and nearly 60 million infections could be avoided by the procedure. Researchers in Japan say they've created a safe and effective oral vaccine for Alzheimer's disease. At least it's done so in laboratory mice. Human clinical trials could begin as early as this year. The U.S. has slipped from leading the world in information and communication technology in 2006 to 7th place this year. The World Economic Forum survey says Singapore and European countries are now outpacing America. The report says a leading reason for the change is increased political and corporate interference in the judicial system. U.S. and South Korean negotiators are optimistic a free trade agreement will be completed sometime this weekend. It will be the largest trade agreement for America since the signing of NAFTA. Fast food chains like McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and KFC are under investigation in China for allegedly paying workers up to 40% less than the $1 an hour minimum wage. The probe also covers charges that McDonald's insists part-time employees work full-time without receiving required benefits. Light sweet crude is trading at $66.21 a barrel, and on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is down 19 points, the Nasdaq is down 18, and the S&P 500 is down 3. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Galay.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. You can join us here in the program, you know, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. Don't know what happened to our guest. He didn't call in. Don't know what's up with that. So, anyway, sorry about that. Did you see where our good friend James Dobson is going to try and make Fred Thompson grovel at his feet now? It seems that possible presidential hopeful Fred Thompson is not in good favor with Dr. James Dobson, as of yet, anyway. Dobson said everybody knows he's conservative and has come out strongly for the things that the pro-family movement stands for, but I don't think he's a Christian. Now, here's Dobson. Here's Dobson telling somebody else, letting us tell, you know, his opinion. I don't think he's a Christian. At least that's my impression. Has Dobson lived with Thompson? Does he follow him to church? Does he make sure, you know, does he know whether or not he says his prayers? Does he know what's in his thoughts? What a damn ignorant fool is James Dobson. You know, these people that preach that we need to be afraid of the Islamic extremist need to keep the name of Dobson and Pat Robertson and the Jerry Falwells. They need to remember those names as well. I am every bit as afraid of those people as I am any Islamic extremist, any Islamic extremist clergy. These guys scare the hell out of me. And so here we've got Fred Thompson thinking about running for president, and James Dobson being the big kingpin that he is, not even a minister, you know. But a lot of people think he is. Says, I don't think Thompson's a Christian. And Dobson added, saying that such an impression would make it difficult for Thompson to connect with the Republican Party's conservative Christian base and win the GOP nomination. Well, la-di-da, Mr. Dobson. So here we are. We're gonna blackmail everybody once again. We're going to blackmail everybody once again. You can't have our votes unless you're the kind of Christian that we like. No, sorry, Fred. No, you have to come and grovel at my feet, and I will give you my own personal test to find out if you're a Christian enough for this nation. I guess that leaves out that anybody that might be a Jewish or an atheist or Muslim or any other faith but Christian. I guess in Dobson's world, you couldn't possibly be the president, huh? Right? I guess that's how it is. How could anybody pay attention to this man? I watch him speak and I wonder, what's wrong with somebody that follows people like this? You see these evangelical preachers on TV lately. Have you noted the explosion of them talking about the seed money thing? Send me $100 and it'll be magnified tenfold. And then they put a dozen people on and say, yes, I put me a check in the mailbox for $100 a month ago. And don't you know, just like the reverend said, I got $1,000 just out of nowhere. How do people believe this sort of thing? How does that happen? Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Cassie.
Hi, Kathy.
Cassie,
how are you?
Cassie, good. I am Freckles in the chat room.
Yes.
And I called because yesterday you did a story about how the troops are losing their benefits because they're getting discharged unfairly.
Yes.
And you talked to the guy and then from the Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother is a sergeant in the Army, and I was really, really upset. I was really angry when I heard what you were talking about yesterday.
Well, that's a story that does make people angry for sure.
And that could happen to him or his friends. And I found the article, and Betsy gave me the article, and then I posted it on my blog, and so more people are going to see it and be aware of it. And what do you think we can do, though?
Well, I think we just need to do a lot of screaming and stomping our feet. And I mean, that's a horrific story. And, you know, if it had been one guy, two guys, we could say, well, you know. But as it turns out, there's 22,5600 in the Army alone. We know by seeing those numbers that this is no accident. This is no anomaly that's taking place. This is
they're doing that on purpose.
It's a concerted effort to get rid of as many of them as they can, get them off the payroll, get them off of the pension, get them off of the VA benefits. I'd be so insulted if I were wearing the uniform and heard that one of my fellow men, one of my compadres, had this happen to him. I'd be so angry.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Has anybody asked the Pentagon about this? Like, I know that the guy from the Nation did, mm-hmm. but did anybody like ask at a big press conference or have it on the TV or like CNN wouldn't do it? But
no, oddly enough, as far as I can tell, the Nation's the only place the story. Of course, it's a brand new story. And
right.
maybe in a week or so it'll get some legs. We certainly hope so. We intend to do our part about it.
Okay. I want to see, like, Keith Olbermann talk about it because lots of people
yeah.
listen to him. And
You know what bothers me as a broadcaster who's got my own pride? So many times I'll be watching Keith Olbermann or Chris Matthews, and they'll do a story, and it'll be a story I did a week ago. that really bothers me that these guys are, and they've got staffs that hunt these things down. But you know, we try and get it here first because we work hard at it. Thank you for your call, Cassie.
Okay, thank you.
Good to hear from you. That happens all the time. It makes me, I shouldn't talk about this, right? It makes me seem sound like sour grapes or something. But it happens all the time. You watch that story. That story will surface on the mainstream media. Some of these days soon. It's not to say the nation's in the mainstream media, but let's face it, they're not CNN and they're not Fox News. So we shall see. That's a story that does need to come to the surface, and it does need to be talked about. Needs to be talked about a lot. Don't know what happened to our guest. He didn't call in today, so he's tardy. He gets a black star on his chart, I guess. Did any of you get black stars on your chart? I remember those days. People nowadays don't even know what I'm talking about. Let's head on over to the phone. I think. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
You were talking about what's his name? Dobson?
James Dobson.
I've never cared for him because he and some others in that world, you know, they have all the answers, they think.
Got them all, yeah.
All of them, every one of them. They know exactly what to do about everything in every situation.
If
you don't agree with them, you're wrong.
They're so self-righteous. They really are.
Yeah. And I heard something today, I don't know where I heard it, on TV or what, but it said that Jesus had no problem with the sinners. The ones he had problems with were the ones who thought they had no sin. And anybody that knows about the New Testament, those were the only people that he got on to were the religious leaders of his day.
Well,
because they thought they were so right.
You start looking at a lot of that clan. You see your Jimmy Swaggarts and your Ted Haggarts and all these people, professing to be holier than thou, and then we find out not so.
They ain't so holier than thou.
No, certainly not. But Haggard, by the way, is an update for everybody. He's completely cured. He'd been through rehab, and he's took the anti-gay rehab courses, and he's not gay anymore.
Well, I've observed that I used to listen to Bill Maher when he was on ABC,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of those people would come on, you know, the right-wing so-called Christians, and they would tell him, "Well, you don't believe in God," and he'd say, "Yes, I do. Yes, I do." He said, "Jesus is the greatest." He doesn't call himself a Christian per se. Oh, I didn't know that. You know, it's like that they have this preconceived notion that nobody could believe in God but them.
And you can only do it the way they think it ought to be
right,
done.
Right, right.
You can only say the type of prayers they think are appropriate. If you don't attend their church,
mm-hmm.
you're not a good enough Christian.
Can I just read a couple of verses from the Bible? Romans 2, he said, "Not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles which have not the law do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves."
Law unto themselves.
And that's people, you know, we miss out on so much by not listening to other people who we think don't know anything. You know, if we're in that state of mind when we think we've got all the answers, we miss out on so much.
Oh, we do.
Because even from little children, you can learn from them.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a lot of wisdom in a little kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And people say, "Oh, that's just a kid."
Well, that's before they have a chance to learn all the spin and everything that goes along. They use straight talk in many cases.
Right. Can I just say one more thing?
Yes.
I saw Dennis Kucinich today.
Mm-hmm.
He's wanting people to write to him. They're feeling their feelings about the impeachment.
Ah.
And you know, so he can get it because he believes they should be impeached, and he wants everybody, you know, to have like a backbone to it and all. So if anybody's interested in doing that, I just wanted to put that note in.
All righty. I've been asked. I was flooded with email last night about that Barbara Jordan clip that I played yesterday,
yeah.
And I think because of the impeachment and because of what you just brought up, and I was asked so many times last night to do it again, I think we'll play that again right now. Thanks for your call, Anita.
Okay. Bye.
Yes, we got a flood of emails about this last night, and so I promised some folks I'd play it again. This is Barbara Jordan on July 25th, 1974.
James Madison again at the Constitutional Convention. A president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. The Constitution charges the president with the task of taking care that the laws be faithfully executed. A president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. If the impeachment provision in the Constitution of the United States will not reach the offenses charged here, then perhaps that 18th century Constitution should be abandoned to a 20th century paper shredder. Has the President committed offenses and planned and directed and acquiesced in a course of conduct which the Constitution will not tolerate? That's the question. We know that. We know the question. We should now forthwith proceed to answer the question. It is reason and not passion which must guide our deliberations, guide our debate, and guide our decision.
Okay, we're back here with the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. And as promised, better late than never, it's Bruce from Talkin' Radio. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Welcome. It's good to be here.
What's happened in the wild world of liberal talk radio, all talk radio this week?
Yeah, well, we are expanding. As you know, last week we talked about the Dennis Miller Show and their less than exciting launch, where they were on some pretty weak stations. And we'll be following up with that one as well. But we have two posts on Talking Radio that were added this week. One is about the charge that Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger made against our friend Rush Limbaugh, calling him irrelevant. And it was sort of a one of those little disputes on a talk radio, or excuse me, on the Today Show. But what I did was follow up on that point, raising the question about maybe Rush is irrelevant. And we dealt with his declining ratings, his obvious fiasco with the senatorial campaign in Missouri, where he made that comment that Michael Fox was faking his
You're right. I think Claire McCaskill can thank him for her
In fact, I noted that Claire McCaskill was actually losing that race in the final week, and she wound up winning it by four or five points. So
if she loses that race, the Senate swings.
You're right.
So Rush Limbaugh. Yeah.
And there's a few other points. I've done a little research on this matter, and his ratings have gone down 35% in the last 10 years. The value of his advertising has declined, and very soon, probably as soon as the next quarter of this year, he will no longer be the number one talk radio host. Sean Hannity's real close to him, and I would not be surprised to see Sean Hannity pass him in terms of a listenership. So that's not a good situation for Rush, and you wonder why he hangs on there, considering how rich he is.
Yeah, he's from what I understand, I know somebody that knows Roger Ailes really well, and so I hear things about Rush all the time. I'll just go ahead and say it. I mean, his life is pretty public anyway. I don't think he has much of a life outside of his radio show. He's pretty much of a recluse. He goes out and plays some golf, but he's had marital problems and all that. I think that radio show is his life, and maybe that's it. Maybe he'll hang on to it like what's his name that's been on for 100 years. All of a sudden, he can't think of his name.
Larry King?
No. He's only been on 75 years.
Actually, it was Paul Harvey.
Paul Harvey,
And that's true. Oh, well, of course, he's not going to quit. I'm being facetious when I bring that up, but it is interesting watching him decline.
Well, it's not going to be any fun to hear Hannity crow about being number one. I don't know which one it would turn me off the most.
That sort of reminds me of the example of the Bush impeachment talks, and everyone is starting to pay some attention to this, and of course the downside is, who do we get left with then?
Yeah. Well, I don't. The Democrats won't impeach him if there's any chance of Cheney taking over. That's for sure.
Right.
I noticed
you
had a story on there about the decline, and I know a lot of people wince when they hear this, but we have to talk about it. You had a story on there about the loss of listenership for liberal radio, and loss of station, lost another one. In fact, we don't have even one station in Ohio anymore, right?
Yeah, I thought you'd be interested in that one, being an Ohio. Yep. Resident, a Buckeye yourself.
Former Buckeye, yep.
Yeah. It was It's something that I, of course, I talk with some people who are active in the liberal talk radio movement. They try to minimize these losses, but I think we need to deal with them straight on. And even if there are, well, right now it's 24 stations in a little over a year that have dropped liberal talk. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, a lot of these stations are the weaker stations. They're not where we get most of the ratings, and we still have 56 stations that carry liberal talk full time. But I would venture to say this is not a good thing, especially in a state like Ohio, where it's very close. And you know, as the expression in my my headline for the article was, "As Ohio goes, so goes the nation."
Wow.
And we don't want to lose that foothold that we got in that state. And certainly, it appears based on some statements that Clear Channel executives have made that they were not happy that the Democrats won in Ohio. And that might have something to do with the removal of liberal talk in three cities in that state in the last 4 months.
Well, it makes me wonder. You know, I study this all the time, and I talk to other show hosts, and it makes you wonder: Are we looking through what we want to be, or are looking at what we want it to be, or are we looking at how it really is? It's hard for me to understand. I mean, yes, these station owners and these companies, Clear Channel and all them, yes, they've got to look at the bottom line, and we keep hearing that that's the main criteria for this. But it's really hard for me to believe that there isn't some ideology mixed in with that as well.
How about this? This is a quote taken from the Cincinnati Post. I didn't make this up. And this is the operations manager, Daryl Parks, for Clear Channel in Cincinnati, and he said that the liberal talk, or which at that time was carried on WSAI in Cincinnati, was, quote, agenda-driven. And this is him, quote, I'm quoting him directly from the newspaper. It was a format that was set up not to entertain, but it seemed set up to get people elected, for a lack of a better way to put it. There were some good shows, but they need to start looking to more broad-based subjects than just harping on politics. Now, I think that was rather interesting.
Well, it is, knowing that the right, the Limbaugh, their shows are nothing but, I mean, 100%.
Politics. And not only politics, but very agenda-driven.
Yeah.
You know, the talking points are issued from the White House, and they go right on to the Hannity show or Limbaugh show. And hey, it wasn't it was the politicians of the House of Representatives that made Rush Limbaugh an honorary member of the House of Representatives in 1994. They didn't give him that honor because he didn't help them.
Why don't you call and interview that guy and find out what the heck he means by that?
Well, I think it's I put it on a blog, and it would be interesting to see what kind of comments we get, because as I said, there are a lot of people who are proponents of liberal talk who want to minimize all this. They want to say, oh, it's not a big deal. You know, it's just this station and that station. And they do point out that still Clear Channel is the biggest distributor of liberal talk radio in the country, but they're the biggest distributor of everything. So,
well, did they I should know this, but I don't. They haven't bought out Taft Broadcasting in Cincinnati, have they?
In Cincinnati, I believe they have. Oh,
brought out Taft Broadcasting?
Yeah, they own WLW.
WLW?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, then they bought out Taft. Mm.
Yeah, they bought out Taft.
Because Taft, you know, that name alone in Cincinnati,
yeah.
That was definitely ideologically driven.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but no, they're, you know, that's their main station. In fact, that station shows up in the ratings book in Columbus as well.
Oh, you can listen to WLW. You know, we former Ohioans, we used to make that straight-through drive to Southwest Florida, that 21-hour stop at the Waffle House overnight drive. And you could listen to WLW Cincinnati all the way into Florida
yeah,
at
yeah.
night.
Yep, that's a big station. And, You know, I mean, I think it's absurd with, you know, even though probably WARF was the weakest of the three stations that were lost. But a lot of people were surprised that they dropped that one, especially considering that they've decided to pick up sports. Now, in Akron, which is not exactly the biggest city in the country, there are three sports stations already.
Yeah.
Two affiliates of Fox Sports and one affiliate of ESPN Sports. So there literally is no other network sports except this sporting news show, which is the weakest of the three. And that's what Clear Channel has done to replace WARF in Akron.
Well,
they've decided to go with sports.
I wonder. Mike Trivisano is a god up there. So, you know, he's I know they hear him in Akron.
Yeah. And Joe Finan, did you know him at all?
Yes.
Is it Finan or Finan?
Finan.
Finan, who passed away in December.
Yep.
Seemed to be an interesting guy. And he actually was carried on WARF in up to about a month before he passed away.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. I don't know what the trend's going to bring. I hope we can turn it around. I you know, to listen to this, the program manager you talked to there, that we're ideologically driven, and I don't know what to make of that. Maybe I should.
I just think take the guy at his word. He said, you know. These guys just want to win elections, and then they won an election, so we're going to kick them off.
Yeah. that's a great one. Any big stories coming up this week?
Well, yes, very big. I'm glad you asked, and I'll leave you on that note. But
oh, sure, tease us and then leave.
A blogger who tries to get things done in a timely manner, I'd hate to be not make this deadline, which I've set for myself, but on Monday, I hope to have a revised listing of the top liberal talkers, which is the first post-Franken listing that will be released. And I think there's going to be some surprises. I'm working on it right now, it's a very different alignment than we had before. So you can look forward to that one, and hopefully it'll be up there by April Fool's Day.
Okay. Oh, okay. if it goes up on April Fool's Day, I better not see my name at the top.
Yeah, you'll be number one. and then they can question my strategy for determining who you know.
That's right.
How I rate talk show hosts.
That's right. It's your ratings, damn it. You can do it however you want. You can do it on a hunch if you want. Hey,
yeah.
Bruce, thanks so much for being on the program today.
And can I get that blog?
Yes, get it out there. Do it.
Up there. It's www.talkingradio.blogspot.com.
All right. All righty. We got it. Thanks so much, Bruce. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
That's Bruce from talkingradio.blogspot.com. Check it out. He knows all the skinny and all the radio news going on around the country. If it's happening, he's there. He knows about it. So you want to know what shows are getting canceled and how many liberal stations there are left and when they're on and what time, and he knows all that stuff. He does keep good track of it. He really does. What do we got here? 22 minutes and 10 seconds before the hour. We hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. How'd you like that little snit that Junior Bush had yesterday? You know, he comes out there swaggering with his arms flailing out at his side the way he does. You know, I can't even stand the way he walks. I can't stand the way he looks. I can't stand the way he talks. I wanted to watch a little bit of that dinner last night, and, you know, he got up and started yakking. I had to turn it off and leave. I mean, couldn't do it. Couldn't watch it. The guy just makes me sick. But that swagger he's got, well, you know, I'm gonna veto this, and these damn Democrats, they're responsible, and, they're responsible if we lose the war. It's nothing I did. I ran the war absolutely perfectly. And by the way, speaking of the war going absolutely perfectly, they say now we have trained 325,000 Iraqis, police and army. 325,000 of them we've trained. I wonder how many of them we've trained twice and three times for their sign-up bonuses and all that. I wonder. But it's so it's just so disheartening to read a story like this, knowing that Bushy and all of them saying, well, you know, as soon as we get them to stand up, we'll stand down. You know, we get these people trained, and we hear the various senators, we hear them say that all the time. What's his name from California? It's running for the presidency right now. And various Republican senators. Well, we know we get these people trained, you know, it's going to be a whole different story over there. Well, we've trained 325,000 of them, and what happens the other day? The policeman who took part in the reprisal shooting of scores of men in northwest Iraq this week were arrested, but then freed again to prevent unrest, the provincial governor said on Thursday. Hours after truck bombs killed 85 people on Tuesday in a Shiite area of Tal Afar, up to 70 Sunni Arab men were shot dead in a town which only a year ago, 1 year ago, was held up by President Bush as an example of progress toward peace. Prime Minister Maliki, a Shiite, has ordered an inquiry, oh how nice, into reports the gunmen, including policemen from his Shiite-dominated security forces. Yes, there are policemen who are involved, the governor said, Kashmullah. He told a news conference in the regional capital, Mosul. They have been arrested, but released afterwards. Think of that. They went and murdered 70 Sunni Arab men. Eyewitnesses said just broke into houses and started shooting. And they were arrested and they were released afterwards due to the demonstrations and to deter strife, referring to protests in Tal Afar on Wednesday. But he said the culprits would be brought to justice in due course. This is the reality on the ground in Iraq. And the Bushies talk about progress and benchmarks and standing up and standing down. This is the perfect example of it right here. We trained those police that went out and killed those guys. We trained them. And they're murderers. And they get arrested and they get released. Wonder how many of them show up for their trials, huh? Or their indictments, or however they handle it there. Wonder how they do that. Man, I hear the Bush people talk about this, how well it's going. I can understand conservatives' callous, selfish disregard for others that they display all the time. It's their pride in it that just passes me by. It's just amazing. And as I watched Bush last night and I saw an old clip of Cheney and then Duncan Hunter, oh, God, where do they find these people? And then Newt Gingrich and, and knowing how John McCain's turned into a complete idiot. What happens to these guys? At least McCain, I don't look at him as being a complete asshole like Bush and Cheney and guys like Rumsfeld. You know, if you doubt, you look at the people like that, if you doubt that crappy personalities are the driving force behind conservative politics, look back at your childhood, and I have done this. Look back at your childhood. I'll bet you a dollar to the donut that every one of your friends and acquaintances who was an asshole then is a conservative today. Mark my word, that is true. I went and looked over my whole list, and it is absolutely true. Ah. I don't know. And I see Holy Joe's done it again. Unable to overcome the wrath and opposition of key Democrats, the White House today withdrew the nomination of St. Louis businessman yesterday, actually, and major Republican donor Sam Fox as ambassador to Belgium. And believe me, that's a good ambassadorship. Fox had become the target of Democratic scorn because he gave $50,000 to the Swift Boat Veterans Group in 2004. You know, the group that tried that summer to tried to discredit John Kerry, and I think they were largely responsible for his defeat. John Kerry was responsible for his defeat as well by running a really stinking campaign and not fighting back hard enough against these people. But these guys raised an enormous amount of money to defeat John Kerry, and it worked. 50 grand. This guy who wanted to be the ambassador to Belgium. And imagine this now. Imagine this. Joseph Lieberman, the vice presidential candidate in 2000, took the extraordinary step last month of appearing before the committee to offer strong support of Fox. This Sam Fox that gave 50 grand to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, Joe Lieberman, appeared before the committee that's supposed to approve this guy and offered support for him. Lieberman praised Fox as an example of what America is all about. What more indictment of Joseph Lieberman do you need than that right there? A guy is dirty enough, unethical enough, immoral enough to donate $50,000 to a group that challenged John Kerry's military record, tried to defeat him with smears, and he gives 50 grand to that group, and Joseph Lieberman stands there and says this man is an example of what America is all about. What America does Joe Lieberman live in? Certainly not mine. To hell with you, Joe Lieberman. Get lost. I hope someday, I hope the day is not so far off that the Democrats in the Senate can look at Joe Lieberman and say, get the hell out of our caucus. We don't want anything to do with you anymore. If it were a perfect world, they'd do that now, but they need to hang on to the majority. And God, don't you need to hold your nose when the likes of Joe Lieberman would walk into the room. From either party. Even if you're a Republican, would you want this scoundrel on your side? I wouldn't. What a preposterous statement. Joe Lieberman praised Fox as an example of what America is all about. That made my day when I read that one. I am glad that Fox, I think he withdrew his own name from consideration to be the ambassador for Belgium. I believe that's the way it went. At least he had the good sense to do that. Man, oh man. It'd be a good job, though, be ambassador to Belgium. That's, from what I hear, that's one of the real good ones. Well, what are we going to do here? Guess we're going to pause for a quick break, they tell me. We'll be right back.
The sunset at night.
hey now, the time's getting away from us. Only 9.5 minutes left in the program. Where does it go? My, my, my. 866-546-5254. You still have time to call the show. I did want to mention an article that I picked up from military.com. And I don't know how you feel about the particular gentleman, but I happen to think there's one military man who's got grace and got honor and that I believe and is trustworthy, and that's Norman Schwarzkopf. He has not given me any reason not to trust him, ever, that I can think of. And he's had the good sense and the good values about him to kind of stay away from this whole thing and let it play out as it will. I've heard a couple of comments from him that he doesn't like what's happened, but, you know, he's kept his mouth shut. I think, anyway, I want to read this article. Norman Schwarzkopf says this Joe Galloway, who wrote this article, is the finest military correspondent of our time, and that holds a lot of weight with me. If Schwarzkopf says he's the finest military correspondent of our time, I'll take Schwarzkopf's word for it. I will. That's by Joe Galloway, and it was at military.com. He said, wars are deceptively easy to get into, but harder than calculus to get out of, especially when things aren't going well. President Bush is learning the truth of the hard way this week as his war in Iraq enters its fifth year. Already, he is starting off the fifth year with $400 billion already spent, foolishly, 3,200 soldiers and Marines killed, more than 50,000 wounded or injured, and nothing in sight but more the same. Remember the fall of 2002 and the beginning of 2003, how fast and easy a cakewalk it would be, how Iraqi oil revenues would pay most of the cost, how our troops would mostly be greeted as liberators with flowers and chocolate, how toppling Saddam Hussein's dictatorship would trigger a democratic wave that would sweep the Middle East. President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney and, sadly, the then Secretary of State Colin Powell all declared that invading Iraq was vital to our national security and national interest. They all asserted that Saddam possessed weapons of mass destruction and was well along the road to developing the most fearful of all WMDs, an atomic bomb. George Tenet, the CIA director at the time, was certain that this was a slam dunk, even though many of his own analysts and others at the Defense Intelligence Agency, the State Department, the Energy Department, and elsewhere were skeptical, and some were downright dissenters. And across the Potomac in the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld ripped up the carefully thought-out contingency plan for invading Iraq, a plan that called for 400,000 U.S. and coalition troops to seize and hold the country in favor of the tactics that seemingly had worked in Afghanistan at the time. Rumsfeld dismissed his Republican predecessor Caspar Weinberger's doctrine, later embraced by Powell, as outmoded, rendered irrelevant by satellite-guided smart bombs, predator drones, and other high-priced products of the defense contractors. Surely a couple of divisions of soldiers and Marines would be sufficient to topple Saddam. That done, the neoconservatives around Rumsfeld and Cheney told Bush, all we have to do is hand the reins of power in Iraq to their buddy Ahmed Shalabi, whose resume didn't include sharing the suffering that Saddam visited on the Iraqi people. No matter, Shalabi would take over and most American troops would pack up and head home no later than the summer of 2003. There'd be no costly nation building, which Rumsfeld and Bush hated. There was no need to plan for post-war security operations beyond mopping up a few Baathist dead enders. In fact, the generals who suggested that it might be wise to do a little planning in case things went wrong were ordered to shut up or be fired. None of these notions turned out to be true, except one. A small invasion force was sufficient to overthrow the dictator, and now we're in the fifth year of the war that's lasted longer than World War II and has cost more money than the Vietnam War. A nation that approved the president's conduct of the war by nearly 70% now disapproves by almost the same percentage. That nation underlined its disapproval by handing control of Congress to the Democrats last fall. The president can still swagger and smirk on occasion, but all he can do is promise now. With 150,000 American troops operating in the middle of a bloody civil war that our actions unleashed, is more of the same. More billions, more dead and wounded Americans, more slaughtered Iraqis. That, and as he told the nation, there will be good days and bad days. I can promise the president from Texas that his ill-begotten, poorly planned, and mismanaged war will be his lasting legacy when in 22 months he packs his bags and heads home to his ranch in Crawford. Iraq will hang around his neck, and those of Cheney and Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith like a rotting albatross for all the days of their lives. No doubt the contractors who were bloated like ticks on the billions they've sucked out of the public trough will write the checks to build the George W. Bush a really fine presidential library on the campus of Southern Methodist University. All of it will be a lie, just like the lies of his administration told to beat the war drums 5 years ago. How will the curator portray the broken military, the broken constitution, the broken laws, the forever broken troops who came home missing limbs or eyes or pieces of their brains, the broken promises to cherish and care for the families of those who were killed and those wounded veterans? How will they portray the corruption, both real and spiritual, that this man and his accomplices have visited upon a nation and a people who once could be proud of their place in this world? How and why did so many Americans, including so many in Congress and in the media, sit idly by while so much that was precious to us was bent and twisted and broken by men who had the power and the money to do the right things but chose to do the wrong things? That's on military.com. By Joe Galloway, a man that General Norman Schwarzkopf said is the finest military correspondent of our time. And after reading that article, I completely agree. Another one of those days, another one of those weeks, when all the political news has been bad. Things have to change, and I think they will. Maybe we'll have some brighter days ahead in American life. Maybe things will begin to get better soon. We can all hope. We must. We can't think that we're in a downward spiral forever. You and I, all of us can do our best to do our part to turn this thing around. Make sure our representatives, our senators, know our feelings. Threaten them if we need to, politically, by withdrawing our votes. That's all you can do. Don't forget to call that number I gave you earlier. Senator Imhoff, and let him know how you feel about him trying to block Al Gore, bringing that concert to the White House, to the Capitol lawn. He's a fool, Imhoff. Call him and tell him he's a fool. I did. They don't like to hear that, but if you're a fool, you're a fool. Well, I do want to thank you so much for joining us today and every day here on the program. I do want to remind everybody that this is a listener-supported program. We depend on your contributions to keep it going, to pay the bills. We don't take a dime for ourselves. In fact, we put a lot of our own money into this program over the years, so we hope you'll help us out. It's important that you do if you want to keep the show going. I think that's about all we have today. We're just about out of time. Where does it go? Start out with a couple of hours every day, and bingo, before you can bat your eyes, it's gone. Thanks for calling today, everybody that did. We had some good calls. Thanks for all your email, and thanks for listening to the program. You listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. You've heard from the radical right.